There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
Right now, a historic moment. We can now project the winner of the presidential race.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
The president-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Donald J. Trump is the president of the United States elect.
This is a political upset of huge, huge magnitude.
The country still divided.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, listeners of the 45th podcast, and welcome back. It's been a few weeks since the three of us have been together, me, Susan, and Sarah, but I'm happy to say that we're all here today. Hi, Susan. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Rabia.
Hey.
How have you guys been?
You go first, Susan. We've missed you.
Yeah, it's almost like I haven't talked to you in 3 weeks, only I have, because full disclosure, this is our second attempt at this episode.
Okay, this is true, but we did have to record this episode over, but we're going to pretend like this is the very first time we're having this conversation. Let's see what we can do.
Well, we have to, because there's been more stuff that's happened since.
More stuff has happened. Well, first of all, I just want to wish our listeners, I hope you guys had a great 4th of July. We did take a break. We needed a break. We wanted you to have a good day. We've all been really busy. Susan's been doing some amazing investigative work on a new murder mystery case that's going to debuted yesterday. By the time you listen to this, it will have debuted yesterday on Undisclosed, if you want to check that out. Sada's been doing a lot of work in her new job, and
nowhere as fancy as Susan, because that sounds so impressive.
You know, it is part of her regular, it's just to be on your resume now, you know, murder mystery solver of murder mysteries.
And then, of course, my little thing, which is no one does Russia like Susan.
No one does Russia. Yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, like,
I don't
really
know. I think Trump's got something on me there.
I think Mueller should look into hiring Susan Simpson, but
I mean, I'll give him my number if he wants it.
You know where to find us, Attorney Mueller.
That might be a little scary.
No. Everybody knows where to. You find us online. That's where everybody can find us. I was at the Aspen Ideas Festival last week, and it was great. And I don't know, you guys might not know anything about it, but you might have seen pictures of me and my child.
Yes.
As we deplaned a burning plane that made like international news,
what?
Which was crazy.
What? No.
Yeah. Well, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh,
what happened?
It was in the Washington Post. It was in the UK News. Our plane landed from Aspen to Denver, and as it landed in that half-hour flight, it caught on fire, and we were evacuated on the tarmac, but very far from the terminal. And
did you get to ride the slide to get out?
No, we just walked down the steps.
Oh my
I'm glad
God.
I didn't.
Were you with the baby? You were
I
with
had the
kids.
Baby. I had the baby. And the picture Aww. Of the baby also, like my friend was holding the baby as we were evacuated. You know, I snapped a picture and tweeted off that we're all safe, but the plane's on fire. you know, I mean, thank God everybody was safe. Nothing happened, but it was really freaky. So that picture made international news too. Very, very odd week it's been. But anyhow, things have gotten very weird today in the news. We have a bunch of stuff we want to talk about. We actually want to start off the episode, top of the episode, with some of the most developing news. And by the time this episode airs, there's probably going to be a lot more information. So Susan, can you update us on what you've heard today?
Well, to back up a bit, we also earlier this week had the G20 meetings over.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And the first, possibly the first, unclear if it's the first meeting between Putin and Trump occurred.
Unclear if it's first.
Yeah. Well, according to him, they've met and they're great buddies, but it was supposed to be a half hour. It lasted 2 hours, 20 minutes. There have been many competing reports about what was actually said, because they minimized. Trump basically brought in Tillerson and no one else, and a translator. And already there's massive contradictions in what was said, what happened. Tillerson, for instance, said they did discuss sanctions. And of course they discussed sanctions, because there's no way they have a meeting that long or any length with Putin and not have sanctions come up. But Trump tweeted out that sanctions were not discussed.
You know, that tweet was really odd to me. Let me
oh
ask,
my God, all of them. Those tweets looked psychotic.
Like, they were a lot of crazy tweets.
Even on Trump level.
This one I didn't understand, though, because let me ask you, it said that no sanctions were discussed or would be until Ukraine and Syria is solved. I mean, isn't Ukraine isn't that like directly related to the sanction issue?
Well, and also, how are the sanctions now based on Syria?
Right. Well, maybe, okay, look, if he had said just Syria, I could take that to mean that we need their help in Syria. They're going to help us in Syria, which, by the way, is another little developing bit we'll talk about. And so we're not going to talk about sanctions. But the Ukraine thing, like, how are you going to solve that without saying, I don't understand.
No, that was a complete flip. But the thing about the sanctions is they didn't want to continue that talk because of the safe zones they want in Syria.
No, my sense is that he is linking Syria to sanctions. They weren't before, but now he is publicly...
I didn't get that sense. I got the sense that they just didn't want to talk about the sanctions until they've solidified.
No, they do. Yeah, they do. There's no way they wouldn't have talked about sanctions. It can't. And plus, Tillerson said they did.
Well, that's the thing. So that's the question is, do you believe Tillerson over Trump? My answer is yes.
I mean, Tillerson didn't even know, like, his boss wouldn't contradict. He's like, yes, they came up.
But guys, this is not new. I think ever since, it first came out that Tillerson was upset that he's not able to hire the people he wants to hire. And also that whole thing with Qatar, Tillerson kind of seems like he's on a different page a lot more often now.
Wait, are you suggesting he's going rogue?
No, I'm just saying that it's becoming more evident that he has a little bit more, he has a little bit more sensitivity and understanding of the situation on a diplomatic level.
Though. He's terrible. He's an idiot. And he's destroying the State Department.
I don't know about that. I think he's struggling.
Dude, he's destroying the State Department. That's what people are saying.
Well, I think he's struggling because he's not being allowed to hire who he needs to.
No, but Sarah, the thing is this. I would agree with you only if it wasn't for the fact that he has dismissed dozens and dozens of people, including senior level career state folks, without having any replacements. Like, you don't do that. You don't empty out entire floors of the State Department.
He has replacements. It's just his hands are being tied. And yes, you know, the replacements.
No, he said he's going to try and hire next year. Next year is when he's going to start trying to hire.
That's interesting.
God, that's a long time away.
That's hopeful, though. It's very hopeful if he thinks they're going
to
last that long.
If you want to destroy America's standing in the world, you would do what Tillerson's doing right now.
Maybe he just needs to get past this administration and get those things in place. And I don't
or
know
maybe
why
he's
it's
a terrible
its...
pick, and he's either intending to or unintentionally hurting the thing he's leading. Look who he hired. Everyone Trump hired hates the thing they're in charge of.
That's true.
Like, Perry wanted to get rid of the Department of Energy. DeVos doesn't even believe in public education. Why would Tillerson be any different from that pattern?
No, I think he is different. I think he's really honestly struggling. But I think also a lot of people have left. The draining of the swamp's kind of been a problem for him. And I think it's coming out in a lot of these things.
He has a friendship award from Russia.
So here's the thing. My husband is a heavily bearded man. And that's great. I love his beard. But I got to make sure he doesn't have a beard growing from his eyeballs to his chest. And so I signed my husband up for Harry's, and he has had an amazing experience. Last week, he got his first trial shave set, and he's never had a smoother shave. He loves the shaving gel that comes with it, the quality of the blades. He was holding it up to the light and showing me. He's like, oh my God, look at these blades. Look how beautiful this is. And he says it glides so smoothly on his skin, and there's no razor burn. And you know, Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades that they'll give you a trial shave set for free. Also, when you sign up at harrys.com/45th, and all you got to do is pay for shipping. So why Harry's? Not just because my husband says it, but because it is a great shave at a fair price. And that's why 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Because this is the origin story here. Jeff and Andy, who are two ordinary guys fed up with buying overpriced razors, they started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade making experience to ensure the highest quality because all their products are backed by 100% quality guarantee. And they offer their blades at half the price of a leading 5-blade razor. 5 blades, and they sell directly to you over the internet, no middleman. So, you can claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up and just cover shipping. Your free trial set will include a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, which by the way smells amazing, and a travel blade cover. So to get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/45th right now. That's harrys.com/45th. Well, here's the thing, though. That Russia meeting and what Tillerson said and the discrepancies between the reports doesn't just stop the sanction issue. It also same issues came up when talking about, you know, the hacking. And so you want to talk about that, Susan?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you see what the reports about what Tillerson's reaction was to how Trump brought it up?
No. Tell us.
So apparently Tillerson was, quote, stunned because they get into the room and Trump just opens the meeting by saying, I'm going to get this out of the way. Did you do this?
Okay.
And no, then that actually said no. Knew. It was the first topic, and it was almost like I felt like it was just to, like a little kind of show that they did just to put that matter to rest. Let's just clarify this and move on.
And so he could tweet about later when he said, "I strongly pressed President Putin twice about Russia meddling in our election. He vehemently denied it. I've already given my opinion. We negotiated a ceasefire in parts of Syria, which will save lives. Now it is time to move forward and working constructively with Russia."
You know, I'm on the same page as Lindsey Graham on this. I think the Poland speech, I mean, the G20 speech was okay because probably somebody else obviously wrote it. But I think everything else
oh,
was
Sarah. Completely, oh, my God. I completely disagree with you. And let's talk about the speech. But you know, before we're not quite deconstructed. We're like kind of jumping from topic to topic. I just want to like kind of drill down a little more on the Putin meeting. And the one thing we didn't talk about is like the lead up to the meeting was also very rough for the administration because – or at least we thought it was, and most people thought it was, because, you know, a couple days before the meeting, you know, the Putin folks, they put out great statements saying we've got, like, you know, these discernible goals, three specific goals out of this meeting. So this is what Russia put out, that the goals of the meeting were, number one, to publicly mend the relationship, number two, to gain a better understanding of U.S. policy, and number three, discuss joint concerns over terrorism. Now, on the U.S. side, though, this is what was said the day before the meeting.
A two-part question, if I may. Will you once and for all, yes or no, definitively say that Russia interfered in the 2016 election?
Well, I think it was Russia, and I think it could have been other people in other countries. Could have been a lot of people interfered. I said it very simply. I think it could very well have been Russia, but I think it could well have been other countries, and I won't be specific, but I think a lot of people interfere. I think it's been happening for a long time. It's been happening for many, many years. Now, the thing I have to mention is that Barack Obama, when he was president, found out about this in terms of if it were Russia, found out about it in August. Now, the election was in November. That's a lot of time. He did nothing about it. Why did he do nothing about it? He was told it was Russia by the CIA, as I understand it. It was well reported. And he did nothing about it. They say he choked. Well, I don't think he choked. I think what happened is he thought Hillary Clinton was going to win the election, and he said, let's not do anything about it. Had he thought the other way, he would have done something about it. So he was told in early August by presumably the CIA that Russia was trying to get involved or meddling pretty strongly with the election. He did nothing about it. The reason is he thought Hillary was going to win. And if he thought I was going to win, he would have done plenty about it. So that's the real question, is why did he do nothing from August all the way to November 8th? Why did he do nothing? His people said he choked. I don't think he choked.
So the follow-ups for you on that, Mr. President, you again say you think it was Russia. Your intelligence agencies have been far more definitive. They say it was Russia. Why won't you agree with them
and say it was?
Well,
I'll tell you, let me just start off by saying, I heard it was 17 agencies. I said, boy, that's a lot. Do we even have that many intelligence agencies, right? Let's check it. And we did some very heavy research. It turned out to be three or four. It wasn't 17. And many of your compatriots had to change their reporting, and they had to apologize, and they had to correct. Now, with that being said, mistakes have been made. I agree. I think it was Russia, but I think it was probably other people and or countries, and I see nothing wrong with that statement. Nobody really knows. Nobody really knows for sure. I remember when I was sitting back listening about Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, how everybody was 100% sure that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Guess what? That led to one big mess. They were wrong, and it led to a mess. So it was Russia, and I think it was probably others also, and that's been going on for a long period of time. But my big question is, why did Obama do nothing about it from August all the way to November 8th? He did nothing about it. And it wasn't because he choked.
So the day before he meets Putin, to even like even before he brings up the hacking, he makes a public kind of a, you know, like he kind of exonerates him. He's like, well, who knows, maybe, but who believes these intel folks anyways? And before that, McMaster's national security advisor actually said that, you know what, we don't even have a specific agenda. It's really going to be whatever the president wants to talk about. So to begin with, the Russians were owning this. They were owning this. They had an agenda. And it seems like they were successful.
They walked out the winners. They walked out. They somehow came out stronger. And I think I watched a translated speech by Putin saying that the Trump that you know in the media is very different than the Trump that you meet in person. And I get that the guys had a different persona before, but that's a little scary when it comes to being consistent with how you're leading the country. So,
well, they came up with an exciting new plan to combat any future hacking, and that is a joint counter cyber, security.
We're so doomed.
Yeah, I mean, this is like fascinating. And Trump tweeted about this, that, you know, and he connected it to the hacking, that we talk about the hacking and in order to combat this, Russia and the United States are going to work together on cybersecurity. What?
I think with cybersecurity was it, a lot of it was online recruitment of ISIS as well, because now that they've actually, you know, that the physical territory has kind of been shrinking a bit. I think the biggest threat of ISIS now is online. So...
Maybe they're hacking the election now? Maybe. That's what they're going to claim.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of trying to drown out the election issue, but bring up more the fact that there's cybersecurity issues. Well, as though the hacking isn't a part of that.
No, but listen, Sarah, this was the tweet. This is exactly what the tweet says. Putin and I discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit so that election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded. He did not talk about ISIS. He wants to use Putin to help us prevent them from hacking us.
How's that going to work?
Mm-hmm. Impenetrable cybersecurity unit.
It's a great name.
Plus, there's four spaces after it.
Well,
I am not going to comment on those tweets.
The bottom line on the hacking issue, I think, is this from this administration, is they're not taking this seriously. And
They are very seriously planning to hack the next election.
That's what's going on, is I think that, and to me, this is collusion right here. When you're not going to take a threat of a foreign nation hacking you seriously, it's done it in the past, your intel agencies are saying, you know their election's coming up. The only thing that this administration is concerned about when it comes to elections, actually, is voter fraud in the United States. And they've established a commission for that. We're going to talk about that in another episode because this is kind of problematic. But they're, you know, claiming that people are voting twice and non-citizens are voting and all this stuff is happening. That's what they're worried about. They don't care about Russia hacking the elections.
I'm curious to know what kind of transactional deals are being discussed in that meeting regarding Syria, oil, you know, other things that could potentially, you know, that whole connection with Russian banks. I mean, what else was being discussed? Because it went on for 2 hours, 2.5 hours instead of the allotted time.
And the first lady tried to break it up.
She didn't succeed.
Well,
apparently.
So, okay, that was like last week. But over the weekend, there's been some breaking news about Trump Jr., Donald Trump Jr.
And Kushner. Yes,
and Kushner.
Well, so what apparently happened is that Trump Jr., Donnie Jr., gets a call from one of his, like, acquaintances from the Miss Universe in Moscow in 2013, who was a guy named Rob Goldstone, who's connected to a couple other guys that are sort of loosely connected to Trump and them, such as the Aguilerovs, an Azeri Russian family that basically set up Trump in Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant, and also is apparently a connection between him and Putin. Anyway, Rob Goldstone, this guy, says, I got this lawyer from Russia, and she wants to talk to you. She has damaging information on Clinton that will help your campaign. Can you meet with her? And Trump Jr. says, yeah, let's do it. Let's do this thing. So they all go to Trump Tower.
This includes Manafort, of course. Right?
Yeah, they have a meeting. They have Manafort there. They got Kushner there. They got Donnie Jr. there. They don't have the man himself, DJT, they say. Anyway, at this meeting, what happens is the lawyer brings up Russian child adoptions. Basically, a few years back, we enacted a law intended to combat human rights abuses in Russia by limiting sort of financial transactions that certain human rights abusers can engage in, which Putin really hates. And in reaction to that, Putin blocked American adoption of Russian children. So this attorney brings up this whole Russian child adoption thing. And this is where the story starts like going off the rails. When Trump Jr. is asked about this by the Times, he says, no, I didn't get anything. I was basically he's saying he was tricked into going to a meeting by this lawyer to talk about child adoptions when he was going there to talk about the damaging information on Clinton she claimed to have had.
I thought it was the other way around.
No. Yeah, no, no. He fully admits. He's like, yeah, I went because she said she had damaging information on Clinton. But then she was just, it was all a trick to get me to talk about child adoptions.
All right, so here's my question, Susan. I mean, and maybe I'm just not seeing it. I don't really see what the scandal so much, like, if he thought he was going to talk about something legitimate,
Was there ever a legitimate chance to ever talk about?
No, but why? But no, listen, here's the reason why. Because campaigns routinely gather negative information about their opposition. That's not new. I mean, if somebody's offering, like, we've got some damaging stuff on your opponent,
anyone
why wouldn't
would go.
You? Yeah, why wouldn't you meet that person?
If it's the Russian government, you don't.
Hmm. Is that breaking a law, do you think?
Campaign law?
I don't know campaign finance law, but I know that when you lie about it in security forms, that's a big problem. Kushner didn't disclose this meeting. In his first forms he filed, it did not come up, which is partially, it looks like, how the story breaked. He recently refiled his disclosures, and he included this meeting. And it also goes to the fact he's been lying about it for days and months and now about the year on end.
Why did he fess up?
Why today?
Yesterday, the first article, yesterday what happened is the Times broke the story about the meeting. And that was like sort of the first one to come out. And that time, the response from the Trump campaign is that the Democrats framed us. That was legit their explanation for it. Yeah. And then today we find out that the reason for the meeting was that Trump Jr. had been promised damaging information. So they lied about it yesterday, they lied about it again today. And basically everything they say is a lie that they only change when they get confronted with it.
Okay, I don't necessarily see the, I guess maybe where I might have some questions about, there's the disclosure question, but there's also, I think this is that if he was confronted with this information that these people wanted to provide, it's a foreign government, and maybe it's been collected illegally in violation of, you know, some kind of laws or whatever, then maybe they should have reported that actually to law enforcement, maybe that might seem like he's less guilty, or maybe he just like, I don't want to touch this, I'm not talking about it, I'm not reporting it. That could also be a reaction, right?
Okay, here's the thing.
I cannot believe I'm defending Donald Trump Jr. But anyway, I'm not defending him. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, you're just questioning. That's okay.
So bringing up the child adoption thing, that is about the Human Rights Act that would block certain financial transactions in Russia. What they were offering is, here's damaging info on Clinton. If you give us policies that help us. Okay. That's illegal.
Yeah,
can't do that.
See, that's
collusion. This is like hands down collusion.
See, the part of the meeting that could get tricky. Exactly. So,
tricky is being very nice.
Oh, and it's also worth mentioning that the Steele dossier once again comes up, because guess who the Steele dossier names as an important person in this whole mess? The Aguileros. And that's the connection with Gladstone. Not Gladstone, what's his name? God, there's too many people popping up everywhere.
Felix Sater?
Goldstone. So Rob Goldstone's contact is the Aguileros, and that's who the Steele dossier names. Also, looking at his Instagram, he spends a lot of time in St. Petersburg, which is where a bunch of the sources for Steele were, too.
You know, but I was watching MSNBC a little bit earlier today. That's pretty much the only mainstream media I'll watch on TV. And there are still people, like, very vehemently defending the Trumps, and saying that there's just no evidence of collusion. I just wonder what rises to the level of evidence at this point for some folks. I mean, like, this many connections, this many questions, this much hiding, you know, and non-disclosure. What does it take for, like, the GOP to... Sarah, let me ask you this. Okay, like, even after the G20, after this meeting with Putin, I mean... Is there no reaction inside of conservative circles that, dude, what did this guy do? He just totally abdicated, like, not only our global leadership, he kowtowed to Putin. He says, well, Putin said I didn't do it, so I didn't do it, and that's the end of it.
I do detect a lot of silence, but there are people that are speaking out, and they're very uncomfortable about this whole thing, even if they think the other stuff is fine and it's just a matter of, you know, I can't speak for them. I don't know why everyone's quiet either. But the other thing is, there's just too much smoke to not know there's a fire. Mm-hmm. Seriously. I just don't. You know what? I get shocked. So I'm wondering if the rest of the party is getting shocked as to, you know, we thought we could control this guy and maybe use him to push our agenda, but he's kind of renegade. So I'm thinking they're wondering what the heck happened. I'm kind of wondering what Paul Ryan's thinking. He never says anything, doesn't touch on these issues. He's just off on the sidelines, you know, talking about tax reform and healthcare and stuff. Well, this is gonna this is going to drown the administration, then how's all that going to go forward? I mean, is that just, is Congress going to literally just go off and do its own thing, or is it going to ignore this, or is it going to take it up? I mean, I've been listening to Lindsey Graham, and I have to agree with him. All of this stuff really sounds alarming. And it's just so obvious, I mean, in so many ways. And even if it's, even if they don't come up with hard evidence very fast, which eventually they will, the thing is, you know, this looks like something that they need to be paying attention to. And I don't see as much attention paid as they should be on the GOP side, which, yeah, I agree with you on that.
Maybe they're just waiting for a point of alarm. And you know, the Republicans are willing to sacrifice our country for power, but the Democrats don't get a pass here either, because right now they're treating it like a normal situation. And we're past the point of like regular political rhetoric. We're past the point of trying to, you know, use normal political means to get out of this. This is a crisis in action, and to respond as if it's something other than a massive national crisis is malpractice.
But, Susan, the only people that can, you know, kind of bring this to bear is Congress. Congress is the only body that can actually do something about this. And if they're quiet, like Rabia said, you know, where are we going with this? Or is there some stuff happening behind the scenes that we don't know about?
You know, the special prosecutor,
probably behind
right?
the scenes. But they should, what they need,
well, they
what
still
we
have
right
to take
now,
it to Congress.
And the Democrats are limited what they can do. They're not the majority. But at this point, I'm advocating for more serious action. Shut down all business. Do everything in their power to stop what's happening. We don't have to hurtle towards national suicide. But that's a choice we're making right now. We are choosing to plod along at a normal pace and to react as if it's a normal situation when really the house is burning down around us and our ability to escape with like any possessions or just our lives, that window is rapidly closing.
I know how hard it is to find the right candidate when you are looking to hire. Believe me, for the last few weeks, I have been looking for the right nanny for my son. It's not easy. There's such a challenge in finding the right talent, experience, skills to meet your needs. Well, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just a single click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in, get this, 24 hours. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. All you gotta do is screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. Here's the thing, though. You're saying that right now, maybe there's not a lot that can happen in Congress because, you know, GOPO controls it. But, you know, there are elections coming up, and there are 34 Senate seats up in 2018. That's not that far away. What's that?
We don't have that long. We do not have that long.
Well, you know what? The impeachment processes, these investigations take time, and you might be right. And we as a nation may or may not survive till then. But if the investigation drags on that long, maybe into 2018 after the elections, we might have the kind of makeup in Congress that could actually force an impeachment. I don't know. But again, if the administration does nothing and allows the hacking to continue to take place, they don't place any sanctions on Russia, there's no retaliation at all. It comes down to our intelligence communities. It really comes down to the people who've been doing this for decades.
I was going to ask you, bring out your crystal balls and tell me, like, what do you think it's going to take to get this all out in the open and settled, or at least headed in the right direction?
So Trump knows that if the Democrats take back the House in 2018, he's being impeached. Full stop. There's no question anymore. He will be impeached if and when the Democratic Party has control again. He cannot allow that to happen. The only way he can stop that is by finding a way to prevent the elections from doing what they're going to do, which means colluding with Russia to stop it from happening, stop the Democrats from winning in 2018. Like, that's where we're heading to. In the open, there's no secret. Like, it's very clear to me what's happening right here. He has to win in 2018. He has to have enough Republicans willing to sacrifice the country to cling to like coattails of power that he can hang on. He has survival.
Every single seat in the House is up for, you know, is up for grabs in 2018. But here's the thing, though. Now, the silver lining of that, believe it or not, there is a silver lining, I think, is that it can come down to the states themselves protecting the integrity of their election results. They can change the way they can. There are ways to make sure that, you know, they cannot be hacked, right? Like, this is the time.
Paper
for
ballots or what?
They're paper. Sure. Why not? You can have paper ballots. You can have voting machines that are not connected to the internet. You can't hack something if you cannot connect it to a network. There have to be ways between now and 2018 that on a state level, people who are concerned about these issues make sure that
But Robbie, do you think hackers haven't figured out that if people change their tactics to paper, there's got to be a way to still do that? I mean, I don't know about physically tampering with it, but that would be an easy solve, don't you think?
Well, what it seems like they're doing is they're not changing the votes. They're changing the voter rolls. They're making it harder for people to vote, and who's suddenly listed that should have been, who suddenly kicked off the roll for their place they've been living for 20 years. So that's how.
Yeah, but you can easily take a batch. You can easily take a batch and kind of get rid of them physically. You could do that too.
But also, they'll keep doing what they did before, the hacking. They'll try and find other ways to.
Well, there are watchdog groups.
This is a full assault in our country. Like, what we're doing between the gerrymandering and what Russia's doing, we're not going to have a country if this goes on to 2020.
You know what I found sad, guys? It's just like watching that G20 thing. And, you know, a lot of people made fun of it. There's little memes and stuff all over the internet, obviously. But just to see the leader of our country and us watching him just walk around on his own and just
wander like a lonely old lost person.
And I'm wondering where. How long is it? I feel like our credibility on the world stage is so eroded at this point, from those other countries to even internally. And I'm wondering, how long can this last? I've been saying from the beginning, I've been waiting for the system to kick in. I'm like, come on, people, let the system work.
The system is the one that does do this. Like, we're America is now a nation in decline. We will never have the power. Like, it's not fixable. We will never ever be the power we were because
I wouldn't say never.
The rest of the world knows we can elect Donald Trump. They can never trust us again. We can never be trusted with this kind of power.
We can't be.
Why would any country on earth trust a country that would do this?
Is it fair to say that Angela Merkel is now the leader of the free world? Is that fair to say?
She is. Yeah, she is.
That's great. Finally, a woman in power. Well, can I talk about something else that is really worrying to me, which I might destroy us before Russia even gets to us, and that is North Korea. Here's what happened in North Korea. Very recently, just the week before last, North Korea tested something called a ICBM, which is an intercontinental ballistic missile. Now, when this was tested, it alarmed a lot of people, number one, because nobody thought North Korea could actually do this, including our president, who just a couple months ago had tweeted something like, well, they're actually never reached this capability. We're going to make sure of that. And then they did. They shot this missile, I think, straight up. But the reach of it from the initial measurements, folks said it looks like it could actually reach Anchorage, Alaska fairly easily. But it actually seems like it could go further than that. There's a blog called the Arms Control Wonk blog, which I highly recommend folks read. It's by a man named Joshua Pollack. And he said that whenever something like this happens, like him and other experts, what they do is they get together and they take all the information they can about these kinds of missiles when they're tested and work out a striking range. And using the measurements of the missile, how it was, what trajectory it took versus what it could take, its weight, its, how big the machine was that lifted all the different things they do. And according to his calculations and the calculations of people he consulted with, this particular missile from North Korea could actually reach probably any part of the continental U.S. So that's kind of scary. And the thing is that another thing he writes about is, you guys, any thoughts on that as well?
No, I was thinking back to when very recently, was it a few months ago that we actually kind of, what did we do? We circumvented Russian planes around the skies of Alaska. And then now this becomes a point that they're talking about in the G20. They mentioned it. So, I mean, it was part of the discussion. And I'm wondering, what are they talking about?
I think that sounds terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying to us, but not to the Russians, because, and this is kind of weird, and this has been going on for years, every time North Korea specifically tests some of its missiles, Russia has a different read on it. So North Korea itself will say, well, we just tested an ICBM, and so will the rest of the world. And Russia will say, nope, it wasn't actually that. It was something else. It was a mid-range missile. Is there something else? Yeah.
Question for you guys. So what would make it, I mean, isn't that being kind of too gutsy for him to go as far as the U.S., even though he's shown some capability of getting to us? Wouldn't it be easier for him to just kind of send a missile into South Korea and just pull the whole world into that?
But it's deterrent. Like, we can't, it means that the U.S. is limited, like, the U.S. is very limited now in what it can do about North Korea. As I've said before, they're more willing to cut off a leg than the U.S. is a pinky.
Yeah.
They're willing to sacrifice a quarter of the population. They'd be fine with that if that's what it took. Whereas I know the U.S. will freak out if, like, one city gets nuked.
Right. Wow. And, you know, this is called asymmetric retaliation, where even if they only have one nuclear weapon to use against us, like, we are not willing to take on that casualty risk. But they are, because at the end of the day, right now, what's happening is that North Korea, I mean, like, this regime is all about self-preservation, right? What they're really afraid of is that there's going to be the regime change, or something's going to happen that, you know, they're just going to lose power. And in order to preserve that power, they're kind of willing to do, it seems like, anything. But, you know, going back to the Russia thing quickly, after this missile was tested, the UN called a Security Council meeting, and we're going to, like, you know, issue some sanctions against North Korea for testing this, which they're not supposed to be doing. Russia vetoed it. Russia said it didn't happen, even though North Korea said
we did
this.
Well, they've always traditionally supported. I mean, it's not like they're fellows in you know, being subjected to sanctions. They've always kind of supported each other because, you know, they both have communist backgrounds.
Well, that could be it. But here's another possibility, which, by the way, this guy, Mr. Pollock, writes about. He says there is a question of whether Russia is actually able to determine with any accuracy what kind of weapons North Korea is testing because of where their satellites or whatever systems they're using for surveillance, like, they're not positioned properly. And maybe that's why they keep getting inaccurate readings. But what's worrisome about that, according to this gentleman and others, is that, let's say, North Korea decides to use that one warhead they have, that nuclear weapon they have, somewhere on the United States, they lob it against us. We have we have defense systems that can intercept, but in order to do that, like, you know, that stuff is launched, like, immediately, within a matter of, like, literally seconds. And it's not like one thing, it's not like one interceptor is launched. Like, dozens and dozens of them would be launched. One might hit and take it out, so we're safe. But the rest of them, the way they are facing, would all land in Russia. And if Russia doesn't know what's happening, that could cause a full-out war. And that's a big concern. So it's important for Russia to kind of be on the same page as the United States when it comes to to actually accept our intelligence on this.
I get that part, but I'm trying to figure out this is impossible to figure out what's going on in that guy's head. But honestly, is it that if the sanctions squeeze him so much that there's an uprising in his own country against him, or that things are getting so bad he's going to be ousted or someone comes after him, that this is the button he's going to press? Is he just going to go out in a blast of glory? I mean, what is this?
I think that's possible.
I mean, because he is crazy.
He probably wouldn't do it unless he thought there was an imminent attack pending.
Right.
Or
his demise, exactly.
Right. And this test came in the wake of very recent joint U.S.-South Korea exercises, which might be our only leverage at this point, is to do something called like a double suspension, where we offer to stop doing joint exercises with South Korea, which, you know, he's threatened by South Korea, in exchange for him stopping testing such weapons.
I don't think we'd ever stop that, because that's so essential to keeping him in check. Yeah.
Well, here's my question. Do any of you know what this administration has said about this test? Has Trump, like, even... I have seen nothing, to be honest.
You know, I'm what sure. I worry about is everything else is a red herring, or everything else is taking us away from this. In a normal atmosphere, this would be a huge big deal, right? So, I mean, everything else. And this is the thing. There's so many stories hitting at one time. It's hard to separate what's priority from what's not, what's more dangerous than what's not. And that's what scares me. It's like, what? This is this mass confusion. And it's so untraditional in so many ways.
And if shit does hit the fan, no one can trust America anymore. I mean, there'll be certain...
That's already happening.
But, like, it'll break... Right now, a country might not trust Trump, say. Like, if Trump says it, they're not going to believe it. But if, like, someone in the intel community they've worked with before is saying it, they might, you know, that relationship is there, they might rely on it, but it's going to break down over time. It's under strain right now. And when bombs do start going off, there'll be no definitive answer about what actually happened, because no one can trust what America says about it.
Yeah, well, it sounds a lot like the Australian journalist who kind of summed it up for us, you know?
That was fantastic. If you guys have not heard this, anybody know who it was?
Chris Ullman. Is that the name of it?
Chris Ullman, you're right.
Yep.
U-H-L-M-A-N-N. Just Google this, Chris Ullman Trump, and you're going to watch this fantastic video. I think that does a great summary of what Trump's presence at the G20 looked like to the rest of the world. And it's pretty embarrassing.
The rest of the Western world, obviously, because I think he summed up how the demise of U.S. in the lead role is kind of a threat to Western civilization, the very thing that Trump claims to be supporting, right? Very interesting, that one. Hi, listeners. Do you still go to the post office? Well, these days you can get practically everything on demand, just like this podcast. You can listen to whenever you want and when it's convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours, the drive, and the hassle when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk, at home, or at the office with Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it, 24/7. Right now, use our name 45 for this special offer, a four-week trial that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in 45. That's Stamps.com. Enter 45. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
All right. So now that we have discussed a couple different ways that this country might end up in a fiery ball, let's move. It all, you know, sometimes these things seem all small potatoes. You talk about, you know, North Korea and nuclear weapons, and then we go to the immigration order. But it is what it is. We can't let these balls drop either. So I want to talk. There's been a little bit of an update and a kind of sort of a win for Trump. It will seem like a win for Trump on the immigration order, the executive order that he signed earlier this year. And that's this, that the Supreme Court of the United States has agreed to hear two cases that are going to be consolidated out of Maryland and Hawaii. And they have removed the injunctions, partially the injunctions, again, that were issued by these lower courts against this executive order. And they've basically said this, that those injunctions now only apply to people from those six countries that we talked about again, Iran, Libya, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Syria. And people from there will still be banned if they cannot prove they have a bona fide relationship, which would mean either a family relationship, another kind of sponsor, like an employer or university.
Those struck me as weird, some of them.
Well, I didn't think that was weird. I mean, look, for all those kinds of visas, you have always needed to show bona fides. That's
not
new.
Yeah, but it does things like make it okay for grandparents and in-laws, but not for, like, other people that are, you know, directly related to nephews, nieces, people.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
But here's the thing. Here's the
in-laws
thing, though, Sarah.
Over nieces and nephews. I don't know.
Well, but here's the thing.
I guess that's direct. Yeah.
I read the opinion. The opinion did not do that. The opinion did not at all define the relationships.
Yeah.
What you're talking about. What you're talking about is guidance that came out of DHS about, okay, this is what we're going to consider as bona fide. And that actually can be litigated.
Wasn't that pre-existing from Obama's time, pretty much?
No, not these. Not for this situation.
Yeah, not for this situation. And look, I mean, even with the family relationships, you're talking about like in-laws and grandparents. Traditionally, those people can't sponsor family members from overseas anyways. What's really going to happen is, I mean, this in a way only ends up impacting refugees who have absolutely no ties here, investors, which I think is ridiculous because we want that money. But most investors, when I've done investor visas, they're usually just people who have tons of money, but they don't have anybody here. So that it's the only way they can come and get a green card. And so they'll put in $1 million into a business, employ a bunch of citizens. Well, that's going to be temporarily suspended. And then people who come on visitor visas and business visas, which also I think is going to hurt us in the end because that's going to hurt our economy if people are not coming to visit.
I think the administration tried to claim victory at this point, but I really don't think it's a complete victory. First of all, this stuff is going to be heard in October. And secondly, it doesn't really change too much. It is, like you said, it will restrict some of the business, but more importantly, it's going to completely cut off refugees So, well, maybe Sarah, that side he wins, but I'm hoping
he thinks he thought he won. He tweeted out that we got a 9-0 decision in the Supreme Court. That. He has no idea what's happening. Let's be honest. We have no idea. He has no idea what the hell is happening. He did not gain a 9-0 victory in the Supreme Court. He actually wrote 9-0. But the point is, basically, they granted cert. They said, we'll hear it in October. And, you know, we already know what the conservative justices are going to do. We know what the liberal bloc's going to do, probably. And it's probably going to come down to Chief Justice Roberts and Kennedy. And it's anybody's, you know, anybody's guess how this is going to be adjudicated. My thing is this, you know what? If, as is, they decide to allow the executive order, even then it's temporary, apparently, right? 90 days and 120
days. It's going to be over 90 by that time. So the question is, how much more is this going to chip into things? Yeah.
So there's that. That's a little bit of an update. In October, when the case is heard, of course, we'll talk about it in more depth. And then there's some stuff, an announcement this past week that ICE has kind of a new policy on deportations. Sorry, I'm talking about that.
That's actually what concerned me. I was actually going to talk about that today in the sense that I saw two cases. I think one was in Michigan, in Detroit, and then another one in Phoenix, Arizona, where there's literally hundreds or, you know, over 100 Iraqis that are being held. And these are like Chaldean Christians and other minorities coming from Iraq who have been held by ICE now in possible, you know, preparation for them to be sent back to Iraq, which, you know, I get that ISIS is kind of like almost depleted or whatever they're saying physically, but sending them back into hostile environments when they've arrived here to seek refuge. So these people are actually being held. And I think the Detroit case has basically a judge prevented them from being sent back, but they're actually being held as we speak. And what's alarming is the new recent move by, it's the person that heads up the Enforcement and Removal Operations Division of ICE. His name is Matthew Albans. He's actually allowing his officers to actually, his deportation officers, to effectively kind of just take action against all removable aliens that they come across. So now there's no requirement for them to have a criminal background. And so there's lots more people being rounded up, which, you know, how I thought the Secretary of Homeland Security, John Kelly, was on the same page as Trump. And this is where the discrepancy is. Trump said it was people who are criminals and that have a criminal background, but now it's indiscriminate. So, again, this administration's policies on is it this or is it that? Confusion. I don't get it. The reason that I actually, this was an issue for me is because of this recent case that happened in my backyard, which is the killing of Nabra Hassanan by an illegal or an undocumented El Salvadorian. And so not only was that luckily because of the mosque that had a fantastic relationship with local law enforcement established that it wasn't a hate crime, even though it's, you know, it's very painful and they haven't corroborated that it isn't 100% not a hate crime yet. But the fact that, you know, this person was here undocumented and it goes back to, you know, accusations of perhaps, or not accusations, but thoughts that perhaps there was an immigration policy of allowing refugees in from Central America under Obama that has let a bunch of people in. Because this guy was the murderer. His name was, his name was Darwin Martinez Torres. He actually is only 22 years old and has a four-year-old son. And the guy doesn't speak English and he had to have a translator. So I think other than this case bringing up the hate crime issue, it was a big thing in terms of immigration, how we're handling that. So that's kind of why I kind of was that was on my mind for the last few weeks, because it's literally this just happened a mile away from my home.
That was a pretty tragic case. It happened in the last few days of Ramadan. The whole Muslim community was shocked and horrified because she was 17 years old, leaving, like, just basically walking to and from the mosque and was assaulted badly, then raped and killed, and her body dumped not too far. But, you know, about this guy in particular, he's undocumented, so he wouldn't have been one of the refugees to come in that program to begin with, right? I mean, he's just undocumented. Maybe he just walked across the border, smuggled in somebody. But, you know, the thing is, like, we can never make the mistake of saying this guy acted criminally, and so this reflects on an entire group of people.
This I agree.
Right. I mean, like, so I don't think he's just criminal. I think he might be like psychotic. He assaulted a woman a week before. So we have to treat these cases, you know, individually and not as like some kind of epidemic that's happening amongst undocumented Latinos. But I will say this, you know, this new order that it allows for the removal of, you know how many, I mean, they say about, there's about 12 million undocumented people here. If you imagine the removal of 12 million undocumented people, if they're actually going to try to do that, it will cost us billions of dollars. We're going to lose, this economy is going to lose billions of dollars because, believe it or not, even undocumented people, many of them pay taxes. I know. I represented them. Many of them, what they will do is, and there's a reason they do it other than just showing, you know, just paying back to the country they're in, they'll get EIN numbers, they'll get tax identification numbers, and they will pay the taxes without a social security number in order to build up some kind of documentation that they've been in this country so that in case they get a chance to legalize, they have a record of showing, listen, we're good people. We've been paying taxes here. We've been working here and paying taxes here. So we're going to lose tax money. The only people that's going to profit actually is the private prison industry, because what people don't realize is that deportations are not easy. So what they'll do is they'll grab people. There is a little bit of due process. There's immigration court, but there's no right to counsel. So most people will lose if they don't have a good lawyer and they have no chance of, there's no relief offered.
Susan Rabia, what do you guys think of this? Then why there in May 2016, I think under Obama's administration, they identified 930,000 undocumented immigrants who had been ordered to be deported, but they haven't been yet. You guys work in this stuff, especially you, Rabia, but what are the reasons why that didn't happen? Is it because they don't have the resources to get it done, or?
Well, yeah, basically, yes. I mean, like, it's not, it takes time. I mean, in order to make sure you physically remove somebody, you have to have whatever you're going to remove that person. So there are going to be some people that actually have no country to be removed to. You have to make sure that there is a nation in which these people can go back to. Okay, mm-hmm. Number one, you have to have partners.
Your proposal from Sessions that they were just going to dump everyone in Mexico without regard for, like, actually where they came from.
I don't know how they think they're going to do that in a sovereign nation. They just can't do that. Right. Because for him, the Mexicans, El Salvadorians, I mean, they're all the same, right?
It doesn't matter where they go. It's just like dump them back.
Right. Well, there's that. And there's also, it requires a lot of coordination. It requires money. They have to like get a plane and fly these people out. You know, they have to do it with all the law enforcement procedures in place. They're in cuffs. They've got, they have to make sure all their documentation. That's another reason. They have to make sure you have documentation. Many of these people might not have any ID. And I have a client who had no ID, and so they wouldn't be removed until we could get. So I would help them get ID from overseas. Like most of these clients were like from Pakistan, we'd have to find some ID. So they'd be begging. They'd be like, "Please remove us because we've been in prison for like a year, 2 years with like dangerous criminals." And that's another thing is the prison industry actually profits because they get paid by the feds to house immigration violators. They're making money hand over fist. So there's a lot of reason this is going to be nearly impossible to do what Trump wants to do. But at the end of the day, if he actually is successful in removing millions of undocumented people, it's going to kill our economy. We're going to be paying like $40 for a carton of eggs. I mean, like, it's going to be crazy.
Well, there's a bigger question. And I think a lot of people chop me down for being, you know, not the typical cutout GOP conservative. But I do, you know, everyone enjoys The Daily Show. And I love this one, a little clip that Jon Stewart had in an interview with Charlie Rose when he brings up the big question of how in America, just the fact that we're so diverse and it's not a natural thing to keep pushing for diverse people to get along. And it's like the biggest project that the human race has ever taken on. I just love that because it really personifies the struggle we have as such a multicultural country. And this whole ICE thing, the immigration thing, just brings up the question of who we are as Americans and who we accept as Americans and who we don't. So, I think it would be cool to have that clip play for our listeners to listen to, because I think it makes you really think about who we are.
But there is now this idea that anyone who voted for him has to be defined by the worst of his rhetoric. Like, there are guys in my neighborhood like that I love, that I respect, that I think have incredible qualities, who are not afraid of Mexicans and not afraid of Muslims and not afraid of blacks. They're afraid of their insurance premiums. In the liberal community, you hate this idea of creating people as a monolith. Don't look at Muslims as a monolith. They are the individuals, and it would be ignorance. But everybody who voted for Trump is a monolith, is a racist. That hypocrisy is also real in our country. And so this is the fight that we wage against ourselves and each other, because America is not natural. Natural is tribal. We're fighting against thousands of years of human behavior and history to create something that no one's ever, that's what's exceptional about America. And that's what's like, this ain't easy. It's an incredible thing.
I think that's a great way to end, unless there's anything else you guys want to add?
I got to run to a coffee because I actually dumped somebody for dinner without realizing. I rescheduled us and then she messages me. She's like, are we still on for dinner? I'm like, damn, can we make it a coffee? And she's coming all the way from Bahrain.
For coffee. That better be
some damn good coffee. No, as in she's in town and she's okay.
Sorry. Well, thank you so much to our listeners this week. Join us again next week. The three of us. Susan, you're going to join us? I know you're crazy now, but
I'll be here.
You'll be here. Yay. All right. And maybe we'll get some more digging on Russia from Susan because everybody loves that.
I think the next week's going to be very interesting.
Nobody does Russia like Susan.
That's
right. I think we're going to see a lot things start to fall apart on the Trump side.
More unraveling. Excellent. All right. Everybody stay on
high alert. I think we're going to see more stuff being kicked up to divert us from it.
That's the tweets, right? It's okay. Is what it is. But, you know, there are people with their eyes on the prize and they're not going to flinch. So they're going to keep on it despite all the crazy tweets. All right, guys. Thanks so much. We will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in again this week. And we really hope to keep coming to you weekly. But in order to do that, we do need your support. So please consider becoming a patron of the 45th Podcast. To do that, just go to our Patreon page. It's www.patreon.com/45thpod. Again, that's patreon.com/45thpod. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. A big thank you, of course, to everybody who helps make this show possible, beginning with our fantastic sponsors. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you to Ray Gaines for our audio production, our kick-ass producer, Mithal Thelhan. Thank you. You are the best. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Please do check out our website at www.45thpod.com. And you can reach us and leave us your listener messages, which we love to check into, at 202-670-8345. Again, it's 202-670-8345. Thanks again. See you guys next week.
Breaking news.
What?
Incoming Trump tweet.
Oh, what's the
tweet? As of a minute ago, he wrote, "The fact that President Putin and I discussed a cybersecurity unit doesn't mean I think it can happen. It can't. But a ceasefire can and did."
What?
What?
Oh, okay. Man. Okay, somebody take his Twitter away.